But at a certain point, I was just so disgusted with people and how they were attacking me, anyone in the periphery of the story, where I was like, I've heard enough from them. I'm disgusted.
Welcome to another deep dive edition of the Chicks on the Right podcast. We are very excited to have a special guest with us this week, Shane Cashman, who we discovered, who you are an author. You are also a staff writer for Timcast. And you have written some really interesting pieces as of late, one of which was a series about Kanye, which is actually how we sort of got this interview scheduled and how that all came to pass. And we're going to get to some of your more recent writings a little bit later in the show. But you are a bit of a mystery. And so we're going to talk about that first.
Totally. I looked, welcome, first of all. Thank you for coming on our show.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. And I'm sorry we had to postpone the last time. A lot has happened since we first started talking. But I'm really happy to be here and thank you guys.
Well, thank you for coming on. I always try to look up our guests online and try to do a little research on them and figure out like where they come from, what they've done with their, like where they went to college, if they're married, if they have kids, if they have dogs, if they wear boxers or briefs, that sort of thing, cause I like to know people. It's like, cause everybody that when they do interviews, it seems like everybody wants to know your job. Everybody's really interested in people's jobs. I'm more interested in people as people. Yeah. And so there's not a whole lot about you. Shame.
That's weird. I feel like there is and there isn't. I mean, everything I've written, whether it was as a freelancer for different magazines over the last decade, even up to the newest stuff, I'm putting pieces of myself out there. Yeah. But there was like a good 10, 12 years of me rotting inside of like colleges as a professor.
Okay.
Where I was just kind of in the cave of teaching kids, which I loved. I loved teaching. I hated colleges, like as a whole, as an institution. I've been fairly open. A lot of the stories about, I wrote a piece for Fatherly a long time ago. I'm married. I have two young kids, and I was writing about raising my children for a little while on the farm where I grew up because we were fairly destitute. There was a time when we were kind of, I don't say we were living in a car, but we were living outside of the car and traveling around like the tri-state area in New York. And my wife and I were working multiple jobs at the time. I was a furniture mover. I was an adjunct professor at two different colleges, and I was a freelance writer, and my wife was a waitress all over the place. I'd write about things like that growing up on this farm in the middle of the woods in New York and, stuff like that. I'd written about my love of Mary Poppins, which I think is a love letter to the imagination. So a lot of things with me looking at, through the prism of my children, kind of reliving my childhood. But I was pretty much raised on this farm, lived there for a while. Then my wife and I moved to Brooklyn, took care of her grandfather for a few years, who had this like, terrible bone cancer in this old like bomb shelter Brooklyn apartment building. And then we kind of squatted there for a little bit after he passed away, got kicked out. Then that's where the car situation came into play. And then I started being a professor at multiple colleges. I taught fiction and poetry, essay writing, and English 101, mostly to kids who had English as a second language. So I was doing some writing there, but it was kind of sparse. There was like a good year as a freelancer for me was getting like a feature article in a magazine once a month, which was like, it wasn't like a ton of money, but it helped, supplement all the other jobs we had. And at that time I was writing about historical things such as like missing skeletons in West Point, New York. I was writing about a guy who makes a living as Teddy Roosevelt. He's performed at the White House. I've been writing about the history of the air conditioner and how it's associated with like an assassination of a president. And I just realized after a while that the colleges weren't going to go anywhere. I was disgusted with what was happening inside of colleges. All the things that we probably all hear about happening inside of colleges are very true, at least in the ones I was working in. I realized no matter how good I was doing as a professor, and no matter how much I loved teaching, there was just no upward mobility in that place for me, at least. So COVID happened. You're sent home. I was forced to teach on Zoom. I despise teaching on Zoom. Mm-hmm. No offense to this right here.
Right, but it's tough.
When you're trying to teach a class of like 15 students to talk about how to honestly critique each other, Zoom was not the situation. Mm-hmm. We needed to be in a room and like body language and really look at each other in the face and tell each other, you know, deep thoughts about these things. So basically, there's a whole bunch of problems with the colleges. COVID kind of shined a light on a lot of them for me personally. And I ended up having to quit and I had nothing lined up. But a few months prior, I happened to hear Tim Pool on his show, his nightly show on IRL, talk about needing someone to write weird stories about, you know, like ghosts, true crime, UFO stuff. And that kind of fell in line with a lot of the stuff I'd been doing previously for places like Atlas Obscura. And it just so happened that like a week after or 2 weeks after I quit the college job, Tim hit me up. I came down to his studio and then I got a job and then that turned into me doing what I'm doing now.
That's awesome.
Wow. Cause yes. that has been quite, the things that you've done recently, just cause no offense, but I don't think anybody would have recognized the name Shane Cashman last summer. Right.
Oh yeah.
And then all of a sudden this whole explosion with Kanye on set with Tim Pool and then walking out and then all of that happening led you. And I understand. And I think anybody does it reads that piece that you did about Kanye. You're a huge fan of Kanye.
Yeah. Yeah,
and so you were talking to him as a in the wake of all of the like Hitler comments that he made in the wake mm-hmm. of all of the drama that was surrounding Kanye. And mm-hmm. so I know some people were pretty upset with you just for giving him that platform, giving him that attention. And most of all, talking about him as a viable presidential candidate. So yeah. I love the way that you tell a story.
Yeah.
But I wonder if some of that like fandom of him clouded mm-hmm. your ability at all to recognize like how angry he has made people.
I even like dance with that subject in that series because I'm constantly kind of toggling between my own objectivity and subjectivity because I'm telling the people, telling the reader, I'm borderline obsessed with this guy's art. When I was a professor, I think I said this in the story, I would have a class debate who was more relevant, Shakespeare or Kanye, which is based on an Oxford debate at Oxford. So I'm sure it did. And I was trying to be open with the audience being like, I'm certainly infected with a bias towards this guy. However, you know, I'm also trying to show people that my whole life, I've, for whatever reason, I've admired people or artists who do this thing where they kind of throw grenades in the culture and then everyone's telling me that they're horrible. And they might be, and I'm willing to accept that fact, but I'm also like, it might not be exactly as bad as you think because I grew up, you know, having problems listening, you know, people telling me gangster rap was bad. I get it. There's a lot of bad stuff with that. I don't know what it is about it, but I love it. You know, I loved a lot of metal growing up that people told me was bad. But it's always been something where like the things I've been attracted to have been controversial, whether it was, you know, my own mom worried about it, taking me to the pediatrician to be like, what is wrong with my son? Why does he like these things? He's rapping ridiculous things at home. You know, I'm coming home rapping like Big Pun lyrics and Tupac. And my mom's like, what is happening to my child? But I just tend to, you know, want to hear this other side of the person when there's a giant, you know, whether it's Fox 5 or NBC or, you know, people on Twitter or whatever it is telling me something's bad. I just need to see I like to be able to see the person. And when I was younger, all I had was the artwork to be like, well, I'm experiencing this in a different way than you're telling me you're interpreting it. And it just so happened with Kanye. I had the chance to be with him and share his side of the story and also tell the reader, like, I definitely have my flaws. I definitely am going back and forth between objectivity and subjectivity. But this is the story. You know, I look up to authors like Joseph Mitchell is an author I would always teach. And he would always write these long essays about people who were on the fringes of society in like the 50s and 40s. So that's kind of like what I feel like my model is for a lot of the stuff I'm doing today is these people who are pushed into quote unquote exile by society. I'd like to hear them talk and then the reader can decide how they feel about them and me in the end.
Okay. I've got a testimonial here, a GenuCell testimonial. You want to hear it?
Okay, obviously.
It's from Mary and her husband from Faith, North Carolina. And she writes, my husband and I both notice that our skin is softer and smoother after having used the GenuCell products faithfully for a few weeks. Our skin looks brighter, our wrinkles look softer and less noticeable, and the bags under my eyes are less visible. So happy. Best of all, they're easy to use and apply even for my husband. She's got her husband using it, Mock.
I mean, that's really kind of sweet.
I know. Look at that. Like, they're using it together. The couple that uses GenuCell together stays together. It's a mantra,
that's
you
right.
Guys.
And it's a great time to check GenuCell out, especially because they've got big, big sales on their most popular package, which includes some of their very, very best products. One of my favorites, the XV Anti Wrinkle Cream, because it's so soft and buttery.
Like butter.
And they're also including, if you do a subscription, they are including a free beauty box that includes some surprises in it. And free shipping on top of that. So check them out at GenuCell.com/chicks, GenuCell.com/chicks, and use code CHICKS.
Going back to you teaching, I know this, I'm kind of zigzagging here, but Mock said that you really are a great storyteller, and I absolutely agree with that. You're a fantastic storyteller, and I love the way that you're just like long form. You get kind of caught up in the way that you write. I swear I'm not sucking up. I just think that is like it's just something you don't see. I'm probably black right now. Sorry if you can't see me.
No, you're fine. I can still see you. But
it's something that you don't see very much of anymore. And that's why I wanted to touch on it. I was going to ask you, since you taught, do kids even freaking read anymore? Like, that's why I was asking, because like so much, because we're in the space where it's all internet. And one thing I've noticed over the past 14 years of doing what we do is that we've almost had to shorten a lot of what because we used to write long form stuff on our site. We don't do that as much anymore because people's attention spans are so short. Do you ever find that frustrating? Just curious as a writer.
I will never change the way I write to appease an audience that doesn't have the bandwidth for what I want to do. Because it's just how I write. I can't change it. I mean, I could if I force myself, but this is the kind of writing that makes me feel good. It hits a certain note in my head that I like, and I put it out there knowing it's not going to be read at length, knowing it'll be picked apart just for being so long. You know, our kids love to read. You know, our 6-year-old is going through Harry Potter right now, and he can't stop listening to the audiobooks. He's doing Narnia. You know, we're into C.S. Lewis. Mm-hmm. I love C.S. Lewis.
Yeah, fantastic.
You know, he hasn't gotten past Narnia yet, but I can't wait to show him other C.S. Lewis things. But they love to be told stories, but that's because they have parents who love to read, right. You know? And when I was a teacher, definitely students didn't want to read. I remember giving them one of my favorite pieces of writing is Martin Luther King's letter from Birmingham jail. And these kids hated it. They're like, why do I have to read this? I'm like, dang, this is like Martin Luther King Jr. But all right. But I realized they will read. You just have to like make them excited about the words. And so I would tailor their writing exercises and the things they read to things I know they like. So kind of like how we started this podcast, I would start the classes with them being like, okay, what do you guys like? Let's make a whole list of things. I love to talk about literally anything that anyone's excited to talk about. So once I know what they are into, whether it's music or dirt bikes, really whatever, like it could be Tamagotchis, it could be Pokemon, I don't care. Once we have that pinned down, then they feel like, oh, I can write about this forever.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about word length and what works and what doesn't work.
I love that.
So going back to the Kanye thing,
sorry.
What is your relationship with him now? Because it seemed like, I mean, he really took you under his wing. He's like, we're going here, we're going there, we're going everywhere. And then there was this amazing, you know, 2-part story that you did. So where is your relationship now? What do you feel like has been the result of that work? Do you feel like you gave people a new perspective about Kanye that they didn't? Have you seen any actionable sort of change from what you wrote about him?
There's definitely some people who reached out and said, they're happy I put him in a different light, you know, or they see what he did, or they can look past the headlines that were made after the InfoWar situation, where they might've only heard one part, but they didn't hear the other part where it's like, you know, he says the Hitler stuff. He also says, I love Jews. And for me, again, I'm telling people like I'm coming at this from someone who like Andy Kaufman. I'm telling Kanye this. Like, I know he likes Andy Kaufman. And it's these people who kind of walk the line of reality and fantasy, which I really enjoy. So I heard from a lot of people who enjoyed it. I heard from a lot of other people who you're not going to change their minds, and that's fine. I'm extremely proud of that story. I feel like I got to do something that was I made a time capsule of that specific situation in regards to how I felt about this society through the prism of Kanye in that like weekend where a lot of things were happening. And then my relationship with him is, we haven't talked probably in, I would say a month or so, but there was a good 2 weeks when I came home where he would just call me and start rapping ideas. And I'd be with my wife. I'd be like, oh my goodness, like Ye's calling. And
that's so crazy.
He would just like tell me ideas. He'd rap some bars. And then he would have me write ideas out, and it would happen in real time. It was so bizarre where he would have me write down things in real time while I'm on speakerphone in his car, and then he's making me read them. I'm like, dude, I'm not that like, I write really long stories. They take me like a few days at least to write. And now I'm writing lyrics on my phone while he's listening to me, and he's expecting stuff. And you know, like I said, he's one of my favorite artists. So, but he would listen to me, and then he'd hear a word or a phrase he would like, then he would go on a tangent and then rap something else. So I got to see like more behind the scenes of him creating, which was really exciting. It was like, it reminded me a lot of the workshops in my classrooms where we were just kind of freestyling ideas, and he'd be a very harsh critic of certain things. And I'd be like, all right, that's fine. Like I'm learning. Like that's, I love that. So that went on for a little while. And then, you know, I think he just kind of had to disappear for a bit. And then I just don't like, you know, I feel like I could hit him up all the time if I wanted to be like, I'm listening to your song right now. Da, 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 da. But he went away, you know, like he kind of always does when he does, he makes the culture, he sets it on fire, then he disappears for a little bit. This time he did the same thing, except this time he came back married, you know?
So. Is he going to run, do you think? Like, is he actually going to make a go at the presidency?
I believe he will, yeah.
Really? Will he run? Will he genuinely think that he's a good candidate? Like, for real?
I do believe he could be a good candidate. You know, I can't speak to his platform. I mean, I saw his platform. I can't talk about it yet because he's like, it's secret to him and I don't want to do that to him. But he's got a platform that I read that I think a lot of people who don't, you know, I don't want to say because like the right and left doesn't even mean anything to me anymore. Like it's just, but people who lean more conservative or hate what the left has done with progressivism, I think there's a lot of the stuff in this platform that people will be like, oh, I like that. There's other things, and I address this in the story, I think in part two, where I'm like, where there's things I don't agree with, which, you know, if those things come into play, I'm not going to be so cool with it. You know, they're talking about rewriting the Constitution, which sounds like a kind of ridiculous, kind of very yay, egotistical thing to say. But my concern was a lot of those things could lead to blasphemy laws. And I don't understand who's in charge of making blasphemy laws, because I don't trust any authority. And I definitely don't trust, you know, even if you believe in the authority today, tomorrow's authority could be completely tyrannical and unjust. And like I told him in the story, you know, if you create this society that will have these new blasphemy laws, which some of them I can get behind, because I think we are a wicked and corrupt and deranged society, you could, though, be used against people like a young Kanye, that like these young artists couldn't exist in that world. I also don't believe in saying that only a certain type of religion can run for office. You know, I understand why we could all agree on that. And you know, I understand the sentiment behind it, but it just, to me, doesn't feel like that's the move. That's not the move.
And that's what he wants.
That's what people in his camp want. I don't know if he specifically wants that, but I talked to a lot of those people he was with, whether it was Nick
and that guy. I mean,
so it's a little anti-freedom is what you're saying. It's a little yeah,
there's things that are very pro-freedom, but there's things that are very anti-freedom, anti-individual,
right.
So a lot of these things I love. I'm so into it, I want to shut down all the alphabet agencies, as ridiculous as that sounds. I'm over it. I get rid of the IRS for all I care. Mm-hmm. I'm done with a lot of it. I want a very small government. You know, I do appreciate that. You know, and there was things where I was telling him, I think the government has abused its citizens for decades.
Yeah.
And one of my biggest problems, you know, you look at what our government did to the men at Tuskegee with giving people syphilis and just studying them. We did the same thing in Guatemala, where we just inject these diseases into people and kind of sit back and watch what happens. That to me is completely evil. So when I'm talking to him about it, he, you know, he gets that. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And I appreciate that he could have this platform where he could talk about things like human trafficking. He'd talk about these horrible experiments that are done on our own people. So I like all of that. But there's those other things I'm talking about, which I can't get behind because I believe in free will. You know, I believe in the individual. But he is extremely serious, as far as I can tell. I will not be surprised if he is actually running. I bet what he wants to do is be on the debate stage, which would be interesting to watch.
Wow.
But we're in a world that's post-Trump where anything's possible. So that's why I won't discredit anyone at this point.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we wouldn't need to rewrite the Constitution to get rid of the IRS. That's one thing. We could just do that because the founders didn't want it anyway.
Yeah,
but it's very interesting. True. And you're right. It is a post-Trump era. And anything goes. It's like that opened the Pandora's box, right? So,
yep, for better or for worse.
Right.
Yep.
Our government will not stop spending our money. They just won't stop spending. Like they're literally like sorority girls with daddy's credit card on spring break, and they won't stop spending. They've already blown through $31.4 trillion. Like they've blown through the debt ceiling. Okay. So, we've got to like make a plan, right? As people, you got to make a plan, and it's just not enough to hold the whole, you know, just putting money in a can in the backyard. You can't do that. I used to do that.
Or relying on Social Security. Oh my God.
You can't do that. You know? Mm-mm. So this is why you got to look at stuff like gold and diversifying into gold with Birch Gold, people like them. And they have 20 years of experience converting IRAs and 401ks into precious gold, you guys, into precious metal IRAs, which is something that I didn't quite understand. And I really don't know if I want to understand it. I just want somebody else to understand it and then do it for me. You know what I mean?
Well, this is why Birch Gold, these are your people. Mm-hmm. Because I had no clue. I was just like you, where I was just like, I don't understand how like you have a precious metals IRA. Right. That doesn't make any sense to me. And I was also kind of nervous, like, do I really want to just dump all of my IRA savings into a precious metals IRA? The beauty is you don't have to. You can take a little piece as of your current existing IRA or savings or whatever and put that into a precious metals IRA so that you're diversified. We know this is key, right? To have more.
Exactly.
You don't want all your eggs in one basket. Mm-hmm. And the best thing about Birch is that they break it down into terms that like a monkey can understand. You know what I mean? And I needed that because I don't understand any of this. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that they send you, the information kit that they send you, so easy to figure out. And it's for free. All you have to do is text the code CHICKS to 989898. They're going to send you the information and then you can decide. There's no obligation. If you read through their information and you think, no, that's not for me, that's okay. But the beauty of it is that you've just been educated. And that's the most important part. That's what Birch Gold is so good at.
Just like a monkey.
So text CHICKS to 989898. So your next piece that you did late December was about Carrie Lake. And I was really interested to read that you actually went to the court battle that she had when she was suing Katie Hobbs over the whole, you know, the Maricopa County results and all of that. And it's still, she's pursuing that, I understand.
Yeah.
But you came away from being there with infuriating story about it was NBC, right? The NBC journalist that was there and how nobody was actually listening to what was being said.
Yep.
So your takeaway was that, there was some major fuck uppery going on in that whole voting system. So how do you feel about where our elections are in general going forward?
My distrust points in every direction in this country right now. I love America. I love this country, and I'm just deeply saddened by the amount of distrust I think we've all started having with every institution, you know, whether it's the universities or it's our own election systems. That court case was interesting because you're watching people discuss what looks like broken chains of custody with ballots. You're looking at those ballots that were 19-inch ballots printed on 20-inch paper, which they said were being rejected by the machines. And it was just kind of like this odd you know, it's like I wanted to hear it. So I'm very reluctant to be like, oh, now I'm hearing it. So it's just like this confirmation bias, because I went into it being like, I don't trust any of this anyway. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to listen. Both sides are talking. But, you know, when you're watching people talk about things that seem nefarious, whether it was the wait times, ballots being rejected, the printing problems. I think there was at one point when they said they knew it, there was an issue happening, but they didn't address it or even say anything publicly. And they didn't even discuss it until day two or three of that trial. You know, all these things, I was like, this is something. Maybe it's not this evidence of this widespread problem, but something bizarre is happening here. And I'm sitting next to NBC guy, and he's just taking 20 minutes to send out a tweet about something someone he likes, this person who's on the stand right now, because they're speaking out against Carrie Lake's team. And so he's tweeting forever about what he heard them say. Meanwhile, he's not listening to the rest of the debate or the counter arguments. And it was just, I walked away feeling very, very sad for the state of media, which is nothing really new for me. It's not so unique. I feel that way already. But to be inside of that room, to watch this guy with the perfect hair who had the van outside with the camera crew, then go report on his side of the world as he saw it, you know, with an air of objectivity, but it was just a mask. The objectivity is, it's fake. Yeah. You know, people want objectivity. I want objectivity. I don't really write completely objective ever, but this guy goes out there with, you know, the whole getup, pretending to be the authority on objectivity, but he's just giving you a very skewed look on reality. And he's got that like condescending tone that he uses, where, you know, I just started noticing that stuff, you know, probably around 2015, when there were different local news outlets that would report on Trump or any, you know, right-leaning candidate. Yeah. It would seem to be objective, but there was a certain way they would talk about right. it. They'd frame it a certain way or use certain words or certain tones that was screaming subjectivity. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think something's totally corrupt with our country, with pretty much every institution. Our election systems, I don't think, can be trusted. And our media is like an arm of the government, especially the corporate media, that does their bidding, where they go out and they pretend to be objective and they sell you this like the perfect little manicured idea of truth. And people who don't have time to, you know, go and do all the crazy research that people in our world do, they sit home at the end of the day after a long day of work, taking care of their family, paying their bills, and they expect objectivity to come through their TV screen, which is a problem. And they hear this guy talk and they take him at face value, and that's it. And yeah. that's how we start to warp our reality, which is an extreme problem.
Yeah. And like, who are the journalists these days? Who are they?
I like a few journalists. I detest journalism. Modern journalism is terrible. I mean, I love a lot of journalists. There's some that I like. I love Whitney Webb. You know, she's one of my favorite journalists right now. I love what she does. You know, I love Taibbi. There's a bunch out there doing great work, but journalism is a wasteland.
Yeah.
And, you know, is a lot of people pretending to be objective about certain things, but even when they frame things, that is a lack of objectivity by you not showing things, you know. That's why, you know, when I'm writing, I call myself a journalist every now and then. I consider myself a writer, but I'm just like, this is how I'm thinking about all this stuff. So clearly it's subjective. And these are all my angles, and you take it or leave it. And if you like it, you like it, that's great. You know, I'm not going to change your minds. Maybe I will, but I just think journalism is in a very sad place, because a lot of it seems to be people virtue signaling to their own team, or just trying to get one over on the people that they perceive to be their political opponents. And then Twitter just makes it all worse, because there's a lot of journalists who go out of their way to just kind of like instigate problems. Mm-hmm. But I'm, you know, the reason I like doing what I do is I just talk to people. And, you know, that's all I could do. You know, I wish I could do the stuff that Whitney Webb does. I think she's probably one of the most important journalists alive right now.
Let me ask you then, because the criticism that you're getting, and you're getting a lot for your Eliza Blue story, would you do, because you said that you called yourself a journalist sometimes. Were you a journalist when you talked to Eliza Blue, when you wrote that story?
I think I refer to myself as one, for lack of a better word, but I'm not the investigative journalist that I think people wanted me to be.
I think that's fair because, you know, there's a lot of people who are asking the question, why in all of that hullabaloo did you not reach out to some of the people who claim that the biggest piece of that story, which was the censorship part, why did you not reach out to those people to get their story and learn the things that they had uncovered?
Well, two things with that. I had spent 2 weeks listening to all those people live stream every day, taking super chats, making money, talking to, saying everything they want to say. And I understood that. I think most of the questions I would ask, I asked Eliza, were based on the people with those questions doing that, who, you know, there's a number of them. And the other thing was, I was planning to write an entire story on one or two of those people separate of the Eliza thing. But then throughout the writing that story, and if you've read that series, you'll like the second I landed in Illinois in Quad City, you know, my name was out there as a person going to write this story. So now I'm like in the story. I'm typically always in my stories, but now I'm like in the story, which I don't ever like to be like while I'm writing, because I just don't like writing under that kind of like situation. Mm-hmm. But I was, and then that becomes a part of the story. And you know, the censorship angle was something I kind of pressed Eliza on, because you know, her answer to that, when I think when we got to that, was, well, that video is not public. And I said, but it was public when people shared screenshots from that video. She said, well, it's not anymore. I'm like, but it was when people shared it. Mm-hmm. So then her, you know, her side of the story was that her legal team has some case that's ongoing with that video, and that they shared something that, according to her and according to this case number, which I couldn't see, was proof enough for these places to take down that video. So that was her side of the story. But and as that's happening, as people now know I'm the one out there writing the story, they want me to be an investigative journalist. They want me to be this thing that I've kind of never been. I've always been the person that just goes out and talks to the person in the face of the controversy, mm-hmm. especially with the Carrie Lake and the Kanye stories. So, but at a certain point, I was just so disgusted with people and how they were attacking me, anyone in the periphery of the story, where I was like, I've heard enough from them. I'm disgusted. I was going to write a whole story on these people. I had their contact. I was ready to go. You know, even though I felt like I had a pretty good handle on what they were saying with the censorship stuff, which I get, because I don't like censorship either. But I became disgusted with how they were acting, because at a certain point, these people, some of them, were like giving people that in my team ultimatums on when they should, what they should talk about, how they should address this.
We got some of that too.
You're not like, you sound like a Batman villain at this point. Like, I'm not going to acquiesce to these ultimatums.
Right.
To me, that's disgusting. It's one thing to ask questions. Questions are great. I had all the same questions most of them had. But when it gets to like this, like maliciousness and these like weird personal attacks and going after people's families, you know, doing these things, these weird threats I was getting, like these like death threats, these pseudo death threats, people sharing the address where I was staying out there.
Yeah.
At a certain point, I'm like, well, now I'm not going to talk to these people, because there's no good faith in that. There is good faith in asking questions, because, you know, the whole story, Eliza's whole story, was under pressure.
Right.
I was going out there at first, you know, to interview someone. And like I say in the story, I was going out there to kind of interrogate her. You know, a lot of people will say, well, I didn't interrogate her enough, but that's just not my style. You know, I asked her a lot of questions I'd rather not ask anybody. And like what I said to her, or I said to the story, I think I said it to her and in the story, I'm either going to expose some like psychotic elaborate lie that she's constructed, or I'm going to make this person relive some terrible trauma I wouldn't wish on anybody. That aside, no amount of her lying, if she's lying, would warrant the kind of attack I saw coming from the camps that, you know, these people who I then refused to talk to, because I was just disgusted. You know, I was disgusted. And that's where I went with that. So people had in their minds, when they found out it was me going out there, that I would be the person to investigate this to a degree that is just not what I do. Everything I've done, I go out and talk to the person who is in this type of digital war zone. I get their side of the story. I give all my weird thoughts and imaginations And then the reader can decide for themselves how they feel about it. You know, when Kanye did his thing, I didn't go out and talk to like the Jewish community to get their side of the right. point of view. When I did Carrie Lake, I didn't go to Katie Hobbs to give her side of the view. I could have, but that's just not what I do. Mm-hmm. You know, at another point, maybe I would, but
I think it's fair.
But I think they just wanted me to be a thing that I'm not.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I don't expect people to like what I do. I write very long stories with a lot of weird ideas and images in them. But those are the stories that I'm proud of. And I'm always going to try to do my best. And I love the criticism. There's obviously a lot of criticisms that I could take and do things better. But
is the story going to go back up? Like, because it was taken down.
Question. So that's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. I was not in the room for that decision.
Okay.
So I don't know yet. We're still kind of parsing through all of that.
Okay.
I would love to see it go back up. You know, I wrote soon after the third piece went up, I wrote an update with this extra interview that then came out as the addendum. I wish that came out with the third piece and everything went back up. But there was so much heat happening on our side in terms of like the threats, the harassment, all this
crazy
stuff, where I think people wanted to just be done with it, which I totally understand. You know, it affected my family. You know, the kind of threats we were getting doesn't feel good. You know, I don't like living that way. I don't like being confrontational. I don't like having to open up any part of my phone and getting inundated with these ridiculous messages. But my wife and I sat down before I even flew out there, and we made a list of everything people were going to say. You know, all the stuff. I'm sleeping with this person. I'm doing that. She's sleeping with this person. I'm a simp. You know, everything. And, by the time I was there, that whole list came true. Mm. So we had an idea of what was going to happen just because of how, like, hot that story was and, like, the way Twitter was on fire. But we underestimated the degree to which the threats and the harassment would happen.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously, my team just got tired of it. Like, I was too. It was very taxing to have to get inundated with some of these messages. The questions are one thing, and wanting me to be a different type of writer, that's fine too. But I think everyone's just like, we can't continue like this.
I think that's fair. Cause I mean, even in the past 14 years, we've been called, like, people have called us journalists or wanted us to be journalists. And we're like, seriously, right. Have you seen us? Like, we don't.
And
furthermore, it's actually an insult to be called a journalist at this point. I don't want to be called a journalist. So.
That's how I feel. Right. That's how I feel. But mm-hmm. I still think journalism is a great art form mm-hmm. that we need to start perfecting again.
If we could
get back to it. If we could get it right
in the schools, if we can get it right. But man, it's like Miriam, it's like Mach always says, it's like putting toothpaste back in the tube, Shane. Yeah. It's like so hard to do that. So yeah.
I mean, I have hope for it. And journalism doesn't have to always be this one simple objective type of article. It can be under the kind of stuff I do, like this Joseph Mitchell stuff. It could be very straight, you know, reporting. We need that as well. But social media, as great as it is, has mutated journalism into this other thing that people expect everyone to do a certain type of thing so long as it makes them feel good about the way they feel about a certain situation. Mm-hmm. My personal integrity, I would have felt like I lost a piece of myself if I then went and wrote a story that everyone was demanding I write.
Right. Well, and I think in your case, I think there was undue and unwarranted pressure for you to be an investigative journalist when that's not your bag. And I think if had people just realized you going into this, you're just going to write a story about a chat that you're having with Liza. Yeah, you're going to have some tough questions, but you're not. This isn't supposed to be like a whole investigative psyop into like all the pieces and parts. And I totally get that. And we'll get the same criticism for not pressing you further in this interview, although we're up against a heartbreak, unfortunately. Even though I would love to.
I'm sorry.
No, and that's okay.
I am sorry.
Listen, it's okay. And we're used to that. But that's one thing that we can push back on too, because we're not what they think we are either. We're not journalists either. And we have no intention to be.
So, that should be okay.
Right.
You know, and I get like a lot of people didn't know who I was before Kanye. Obviously, I was writing mostly like weird true crime stories, but even those stories were me in the story, like losing my mind. So I have this kind of weird apocalyptic bent to my writing where I'm also putting myself in these situations that I get, but people weren't familiar with that. a lot of people built up a certain feeling towards Eliza, which a lot of it was just because they didn't know anymore. Mm-hmm. Who was this person?
Yeah.
They believe she was one thing. Maybe she's not. But then, you know, I'm in the mix and they are not familiar with the Carrie Lake story or the Kanye thing or how I write. So I get it.
Yeah.
I'm not really mad at those people because who am I? You know, I'm just another schmuck who's been thrown out of a newsroom into the story to write this ridiculous thing. It just so happened in my mind, you know, the Eliza thing, the Carrie Lake and the Kanye, I see them all as like this trilogy of controversy of this person who's been digitally exiled or stoned digitally, you know, by their community. And I'm just happy to be there and I'm going to share their story. And that's the best I can do.
You know, Amok, I think I am actually sleeping better. You know how I'm a chronic insomniac?
Yeah.
I think I'm actually sleeping better on my new 2.0 MyPillow pillows. I think I'm doing it. Like, I don't want to say that out loud. I'm afraid I'm going to jinx it, but I really think that I am. Like, I'm sleeping through the night. It's weird. Cause you know, I used to wake up cause I'm super menopausal and stuff like that. So I get all hot and I get cold and I get hot and I get cold, but it's like these pillows regulate everything. There's something magical about the new cover of the pillows. They're magic, you guys.
There's like a new fabric. There's a new fabric technology.
Fantastic.
It's developed to provide a cool surface. Mm-hmm. And it's a fiber, not a finish. And that means it's going to last for the whole life of the fabric. There's a knife edge seam. There's no gussets. They've got four different levels of like firmness because people are very, very different about right. how they like their pillows. They either like them super flat or super thick or firm. You've got four different levels to choose from. You can throw them in the washer and dryer. That's one of the best things about all the MyPillow
so great.
Products.
Yeah.
So this mm-hmm. 2.0 is a game changer. And it's amazing because right now they're doing a buy one, get one offer. When you go to MyPillow.com/chicks and you use code chicks, buy one of these pillows, the MyPillow 2.0, get your second one for free. It's a slam dunk. This is mm-hmm. the time to try it. You're going to sleep better. You're going to sleep better as you have just attested.
All through the night. Do it. Yeah. It's
and
interesting.
This is the perfect way to wrap this up. And I appreciate, we both appreciate your time
really
so much, Shane. Mm-hmm. This was really, really interesting. I feel like we could get so much further into it if we had more time.
Yeah. Definitely.
But I appreciate you being candid about your answers and explaining what your style of writing is. And hopefully that, you know, can quell some of the naysaying, although I know it won't.
It will never.
And we're going to be next on the chopping block because of how we've conducted this interview. So we're used to it. It's fine.
Well, we appreciate it, Shane. It was lovely to meet you and to learn more about you. And we wish you all
the
best in the future.
Can't wait to read
you.
More.
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for talking to me.
Thank you.
Have a great one.